From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 10th day of July 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County will tell us a little bit about the cash grain situation in our part of the world. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll get a weather forecast for the growing regions of this nation and maybe check in on some other places across the planet as well, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to help us take a look at the marketplace. Okay, so we have a lot to talk about. First, I think I read at some point that some of this market new move now was short covering by the funds. Does that mean we'll run out of that at some point? And how much more weather-driven market, given current conditions, might we expect?
Okay, as far as the funds, going into midday, they were estimated to be buyers of 16,000 contracts of corn, 13,000 contracts of beans, and 7,000 contracts of wheat. As of Friday there, they were estimated to still be short about 43,000 beans, 34,000 corn, and long about 8,000 wheat. Those numbers vary from house to house on what they're looking at as position goes. But the bottom line is they're covering shorts, and if this pace keeps up, they'll be estimated to be long over time. How much more? Well, they could be piling longs on for quite some time. Past, we've seen corn long be as high as 200, 260,000 contracts, and the bean long up to 150,000, 180,000 contracts long. So they're in the early stages of buying if that's the way they want to go. And if they stick to their analog programs or keep the computers doing what they want to do, if weather continues to be an issue, if the trend continues to be pointed north, they've got some buying power in here. How high is, that's what we're going to find out here in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Oftentimes, whenever a weather market does develop, it's hard up for 2 to 3 weeks, and then that's about it. So this is an exciting time window, and this is why we've promoted the courage calls all winter long to give guys comfort to sell into this rally here to take advantage of these higher prices. Weather-wise, still debate between the American and the European. Then there's some other models mixed in there, too. But for the most part, the Western Belt will continue to remain somewhat warm and dry. The Eastern Belt, as we move into July 14th to the 24th, the concern is that ridge fluctuates back and forth here. So we still got a lot of growing season in front of us. This afternoon's crop conditions report expected to show 1-3% deterioration in corn, beans, and the spring wheat conditions. So we're starting to get into the critical time window in here where the trade's starting to notice this and start to put some weather premium back in to the marketplace here, Todd.
Do we have any idea where the trade thinks that deterioration is going to come, in which parts of the Midwest?
Yeah, it's going to continue to be in the Western Belt mainly, North Dakota, South Dakota, Kansas, Nebraska, portions of Iowa, and portions of Missouri. Now, here in the Eastern Belt is kind of a mixed bag. There are some areas that's been experiencing some dry weather. I wouldn't be surprised to see Illinois drop 1%. Indiana, there's, two wet conditions, so they're going to watch some of the states here, particularly Minnesota, because they're a big producer, and try to estimate, how much damage has occurred. There's estimates that about 28% of the growing regions experiencing too dry, too hot conditions, and about 10 to 15% experiencing too wet conditions. I think the trade's probably trading a corn yield closer to 165, 166 bushels to the acre. And, you know, if you follow through that on the supply-demand balance sheet, that would put us down to about 1.9 billion bushel carryout. And the trade's probably closer to about 46 bushels to the acre on beans. You do the math on that, that takes us below 300 million bushel carryout. But we'll have some updates on Wednesday. I don't think the numbers are going to be that aggressive on yield. It's still early in the growing season. But Wednesday's report will shed a little bit more light on the demand side of the equation there and give us an idea of where we are after we saw the stocks report there a week ago.
That would be the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, or the WASDE figures. They're due out at 11 a.m. Central Time. Check out our website, willag.org. I'll post my Twitter feed there, and you can see those numbers not long after they come out, as soon as I can get them posted. Usually that's within a minute or two. Or you can just follow me at Commodity Week. You can actually follow what Kurt has to say from time to time, too, at CKimmel3, if I remember correctly, Kurt, as your Twitter handle. Okay, I've got a couple of other questions on this marketplace. You said that would give, early on, you said this would give, the courage calls would give producers the ability to make sales into these uptrending markets. Should they? And how far along should they be at this point in total? So for new crop corn or old crop corn or new crop soybeans, pick one of those, and how far along you think they ought to be? Should they be 20 or 25% sold? Where should they be?
That's a great question, because that varies a lot from producers to producers. Here in McLean County, Central Illinois, we're probably not sold up enough here because our crop's fairly good. But you go on outside of our region, south, on west, it's a whole different story. Somebody's probably 20% sold. It's probably 40% sold just due to the fact that weather's not really cooperated a whole lot. As a whole, we made some more sales here at this 405, 410 level basis December futures. I think you can scale up to 450. We like being 50% priced here on an average yield during this summer rally and through here. That's why it's kind of hard to do here if you're in a dry area, just not knowing what your bushels are. But we feel this, for the most part, is an opportunity to get caught up. There's still plenty of old crop grain around, and it's different having 2 billion bushel carry out and you know, 400 million bushel carry out in weather market versus, you know, much tighter situations. So we want to continue to kind of push some grain out the door here and not probably get over 50% sold here until you're comfortable with your production prospects, Todd. The second part of that, though, is as we move higher and through here, we're going to take the opposite approach and start establishing some higher price floors for those who went the price floor route. This is an excellent opportunity to raise those price floors in through here. If this thing continues to move higher, we're going to be higher than the insurance price that was established this spring. So there's tremendous opportunities in through here to continue to manage some of this price risk here as we go through the second half of the growing season.
Anything else we ought to take up for the day?
Well, if you want to get bullish or look for upside objectives, there's a lot of numbers out, but if the near-term forecast stays the way it is and the commodity funds continue to want to get to a long position, corn could probably, December corn futures, some analysts are looking at $4.75 to $5. November beans, $11. If not, going up to $12. So there's a lot of bullish news out there. Don't listen to these numbers and justify hanging on to cash grain. This is the opportunity we've been looking for the last 2 years to lock in some profit.
I thought you were going to tell me if you wanted to get bullish, you should listen to Commodity Week with Zwicker and Gulkey.
I heard that. I have not heard that yet, but I heard that that was quite a match there. They kept upping the ante every time they were able to speak, I think.
You have to have an hour. It went a whole 57 minutes.
Good for them.
And you have to listen through the whole thing to understand it all, too.
And you got to know those two characters to probably appreciate even more.
Yes, yes. And there is a disclaimer on that one up front. I just as a reminder. So the deal, I think, with Dan on that one is Dan is bullish, especially Beans, based on what happens this week. So I think that's the disclaimer he gave us up front, but I think that it depends on what happens this week with the weather in particular. Jerry, and he'll text me if I'm wrong about this, because he's probably listening at the moment, is bullish based off of demand or potential demand. So those are kind of the two places. Hey, thanks for being with us and all you do for Will Ag. I appreciate it, Kurt.
A lot to go through. Appreciate it. Take care. Good luck this week, guys.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, this from Politico, the fate of billions of dollars for farmers and nutrition programs may have been sealed and perhaps saved last month behind closed doors. That was when House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway and Budget Committee Chairman Diane Black sat down one last time to hammer out a deal. While the lawmakers did not disclose specifics about their handshake agreement on that hot Thursday morning, nor was the total spending figure made public, House aides and agricultural lobbyists say Conaway was able to stave off billions in proposed spending cuts to agriculture and nutrition programs. The Agriculture Committee was initially facing $70 billion in proposed cuts, but ended up closer to $10 billion. That came after Black lowered her original goal for total mandatory spending cuts by roughly $300 billion, and Conaway persistently made the case that slashing programs under his watch would imperil the 2018 Farm Bill. On the subject of the Farm Bill, the House Agriculture Committee is using this week to take a look at ways technology can be used to help farmers curb their footprint and farm more efficiently, and how the Farm Bill can be used to encourage its adoption. The full committee will convene Wednesday morning for a hearing on technology in specialty crops. Then on Thursday, the General Farm Commodities and Risk Management Subcommittee will host a hearing on technology and the future of farming, including tech innovations, as well as opportunities and challenges producers face. Meanwhile, the Senate Agriculture Committee is turning its focus to markets both at home and abroad for specialty crops and organics during a meeting Thursday morning. Organics especially are likely to be a hot topic following recent reports on the shortage of domestic supplies and instances of fraud. Now, let's move to Missouri and Arkansas and dicamba. Monsanto's solution to glyphosate-resistant weeds has hit a major speed bump following the decisions by officials in Missouri and Arkansas on Friday to ban the sale and use of dicamba. The states have been at the center of farmer complaints that crops have been damaged by drift of the highly volatile herbicide when neighboring farms used older formulations on the biotech giants dicamba and glyphosate-resistant crops. As of Tuesday, farmers in Arkansas will be banned from using dicamba on their crops for 120 days. Breaking the rules will cost them $25,000. Missouri's ban went into place Friday when Director of Agriculture Chris Chin signed a stop sale and use order, which will be in effect until December the 1st. In a statement, Monsanto said Arkansas's decision to ban the pesticide is premature since the causes of any crop injury have not been fully investigated. Roughly 600 now misuse complaints have been made in more than a dozen counties throughout the state. That was 500 as of late last week. And finally today, Mexico is no longer the top destination for U.S. corn. U.S. corn shipments to Mexico have slipped in recent months, and Mexico is no longer the number one buyer of American corn. A Bloomberg article says it may be a sign that trade tensions are forcing the country to look elsewhere for corn in case the U.S. is no longer a reliable supplier. Mexico began looking for other corn suppliers after President Donald Trump's criticism, which began on the campaign trail when he said Mexico has taken advantage of the U.S. through the North American Free Trade Agreement. Leslie McNitt, a public policy director for the National Corn Growers Association, says the sluggish pace of U.S. corn shipments to Mexico shows the trade relationship may be at risk. They're preparing for a plan B, she said in the Bloomberg article. Mexico has initiated discussions with suppliers in Argentina and Brazil. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. You can follow me on Twitter if you'd like. That's at Commodity Week. Or if you listen to podcast, you can hear these programs in iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and of course, the NPR One app. Now, up next, you know, the EU, the European Union, and Japan have struck a trade deal in principle that, if finalized, could put U.S. agriculture and other products at a competitive disadvantage in the huge Japanese market. The deal still needs technical work before the EU and Japan can implement it, but last week's announcement in the lead-up to the G20 Economic Summit in Germany signals a possible loss for the U.S. and U.S. agriculture, says D.C. Ag Trade Consultant and former U.S. Trade Chief Paul Drazik.
It's troubling that, at least in agriculture, the Japanese market for food and agricultural products will be more open to products from Europe than it will be to for products from the United States now.
Drazik suggests the U.S. could have had from TPP what Europe will now get from Tokyo.
From what I can tell, Japan is giving to the EU pretty much what we would have gotten in terms of tariff concessions. Product that I've heard mentioned most prominently is dairy, which is extremely sensitive in Japan. But apparently it extends to virtually all agricultural products in one form or another,
including U.S. beef and pork, which spurred the National Pork Producers Council to redouble its request to the White House to get going on bilateral deals with Japan, the top market for U.S. pork at $1.6 billion last year. Drazik thinks Tokyo may be in no rush after TPP to do a deal with the United States.
They're probably saying to themselves, why would we enter into a bilateral free trade agreement with a country that just pulled the plug on an agreement that it signed?
Drazik says Tokyo is watching how the U.S. handles NAFTA and whether it tries to add new trade balancing import restrictions, ones that would also apply to Japan. Well, let's take a look at the weather forecast now for Minot, North Dakota. That's in the north central part of the state. Spring wheat is raised there, and of course they do have some soybeans, as Jerry Gulke has told us. His son-in-law has a farm there, and he does have soybeans in that part of the world. Let's see what the weather forecast looks like moving forward. We'll just give you some of the highlights. They're at 81 degrees for the moment today, but they're supposed to go to 91. It may take some doing to get there. We'll see how that happens. Tomorrow, 80 degrees, a 92 on Thursday. Friday, 100 degrees in Minot, North Dakota. 94, 98, 96, 99, 96 all the way through Wednesday of next week. And no rainfall really in the forecast except for today. And even then, it's just a few hundredths of an inch. Well, of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Mark Russo is here. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. The weather guys are the people that folks want to listen to, Mark. So let's talk a little bit about the weather forecast. We've been hearing about the ridge, where it might go, where that high pressure is going to set. What do we know about it today?
Well, Todd, in our opinion here, we see the ridge of high pressure being a stronger than normal feature, but oscillating across the western and the central parts of the U.S. And as it does that for the next several weeks, we're going to see heat slosh back and forth between the Rockies, the plains, and then on into what we feel is more of the western parts of the Midwest. We don't see a situation right now where the ridge would progress all the way east and you begin to see more widespread heat across the entire Corn Belt, but it's really the western half of the Corn Belt, primarily west of the Mississippi River, but obviously that does include key acreage in Iowa, into Nebraska, Minnesota, and into the northern plains. And that's the northern plains is just continues to be a disaster, obviously, for spring wheat. And the question becomes now, you know, how much of this bleeds into the western Corn Belt, which from a heat standpoint, we think it's confined to the western Corn Belt here over the next couple of weeks. So, again, the worst area is going to be the northern plains, but it's the western part of the Midwest, which will be the area that will be impacted here specifically in the Corn Belt.
So from the Red River Valley, Fargo area, straight south down the state lines between the Dakotas, Minnesota, parts of Iowa, Nebraska. Is that where we're talking about potential problems?
Yes. And those are also the driest areas of late here, whether you look at things over the past 2 weeks or over the past 30 days. And with this ridge position and strength, it's that western third or so of the belt. The areas that have already been on the dry side look like their precip prospects are quite limited, and they look to stay on the dry side. Now, in the eastern Corn Belt, the focus is on central Illinois with some of the recent dryness. They've seen some rain activity here over the past 12 hours with our thunderstorm complex that developed. There still are some opportunities over the next several days before the drier conditions work their way in this weekend and next week.
All right. Anything going further out that you can tell us?
Well, overall, we see this general pattern here continuing for the balance of July. And it's really the theme here across actually the Northern Hemisphere ag belts has been one of heat. We have northern base heat here in the U.S. We're also seeing some northern base heat in sections of Europe and in the Black Sea region, especially in southern Europe. And then we're also seeing this in parts of North America as well. So certainly it's been at least up to this point, a late June and July featuring this northern base heat. And that continues to be the focus of attention and how it's specifically impacting pollinating corn during these critical windows over the next several weeks.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. If you'd like to see central Illinois, some of the driest areas, check out our website.